Opportunity is something that has to be sought and chased. And if you have a growth mindset and you have the grit to back it up and you are willing to try, Alex, the sky's not even the limit. There is no limit anymore. That's why this mindset is so powerful. That's why I believe this has to be taught to every child in the world so that they grow up understanding how to seek a fulfilling, meaningful life. It's why I believe business owners have to develop their employees to think this way. Businesses will skyrocket and soar because individuals will be living fulfilling lives of meaning and purpose. Man, I get so fired up about this.
Well, hey there. If we have not yet met, my name is Alex Judd. I'm the founder of Path for Growth, and this is the Path for Growth podcast. Now, as a business, we exist to help impact-driven leaders step into who they were created to be so that others benefit and God is glorified. And this podcast is just another iteration of how that mission comes to life. Today, I get to share a conversation with one of the most passionate and energetic leaders that I know, Stephen Carter. Stephen is currently the Director of Entrepreneurship and Sustainability at Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy, where he's taught for over 17 years. And it's at that school that he's developed a program that helps develop what he calls the entrepreneurial mindset in the next generation. They've had incredible results through this program, and it's made such an impact at that school that he has now been requested to take this curriculum and help install it and implement it in schools and organizations around the country. He recently authored the book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset, in which he details really what is the foundational piece of the entrepreneurial mindset curriculum, the four attributes of the entrepreneurial mindset. This content is just so good because it's incredibly practical and something that we obviously all want within our organization's culture. I love the way that Stephen communicates about this and shares practical stories about how you can, number one, adopt it yourself, but then also encourage and foster the development of an entrepreneurial mindset within your team members. Here's my conversation with Stephen Carter. Well, Stephen, I am so stoked to talk to you today and specifically excited about the topic that we're going to be talking about. I'd love to start just with a broad question to give people context. Tell us about a story that really illustrates what the entrepreneurial mindset is and also why it matters, Stephen.
First of all, thank you, Alex. And the entrepreneurial mindset is a broad statement, but I'm going to illustrate it in what it is not and what it is. And I want to paint a transformation for you. So if we look at this from the perspective of a student, the traditional path of education says, hey, go through school, go through college, get a job, and you're set, right? You're living life, you're loving life. And I work at a private school in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I've been here 18 years, and I've dealt with a lot of students. And I'll use John as an example. John was valedictorian of his class. John was rock star education, perfect student, went into med school, knew his path, you know, elite surgeon. And I had lunch with John a couple years ago. He's a 26-year-old, almost done with med school. And he looked at me and he's like, Stephen, why are you so happy? Like life's not that good. It's kind of pointless. And I sat here and I thought, where did we go wrong? Where did we miss the mark with John? And I want to paint a transformation for you. This is the story of Max. Max went through this process and Max got involved in what we're calling the entrepreneurial mindset. It was a startup program at our school. And as an eighth grader, Max knew what he wanted to do with his life. He cast a vision, and he made that vision the filter of decision-making that carried him through the path of thinking like an entrepreneur. And Max, today, at the age of 22, is living the dream that he cast as an eighth grader. So when you say, what's the entrepreneurial mindset? It is about fulfillment, meaning, and purpose in our lives so that we can do everything we are called to do.
Man, I love that you hit on that idea of fulfillment, because one of the things that stands out to me, a lot of times I feel like when you hear kind of a dichotomy like the one you just gave us, right, of John and Matt, a lot of times what you see is a picture of someone that wasn't successful and someone that was successful. But I feel like both pictures you gave us were two people that were wildly successful, but it sounds like there was something radically different between the two of them at the end of the story. Yeah.
wildly successful by the world's standards, right? And when we look at the world standards, success has many different metrics. But I believe the metric that it misses is fulfillment. Now, we're gonna get into this, Alex, in this podcast, but when you look at engagement of US employees, the numbers are low. The last I checked, they were below 32%. Below 32% of US employees say they are engaged at work, which to me, that lack of engagement comes from not connecting our work to purpose and calling, which leads to not being fulfilled.
Man, one of the reasons why I was so excited to talk to you, Stephen, is because you represent what I would say is kind of the ideal target for a podcast guest for us, because you are simultaneously a practitioner, right? You're an entrepreneur that's doing the things. You are in the trenches of building a business yourself. And at the same time, you are someone that cares deeply about the craft of communication. And so I'm really excited because I think we've got a really methodical plan in this podcast to take the transformation that you just talked about and make that something that's really accessible, walking through the four attributes of the entrepreneurial mindset that you've labeled. But before we get into what those four attributes are, I'd like you just to share with us, like, okay, yes, this is content that you teach students around the country and that you're implementing into schools around the country right now. Why does it apply to the business owner and their team members?
100%. And I'll tell you, Alex, this was accidental in nature because I'm an educator and my entire career has been spent in K-12 education and preparing students for their future. And as I was giving talks and presenting and launching a business that now is focused on developing the entrepreneurial mindset in all learners, so they are radically transformed to impact their lives, which that mission statement is thanks to Path for Growth and my work with all of you. Along that journey, I've come in contact with so many fascinating people, and several of them have said, Stephen, like, come talk to my team. Come talk to my employees. And Alex, this cuts to the heart of what we call intrapreneurship. You know, entrepreneurship often is associated with the solopreneur or the person starting a venture. But within a team, within an organization, if you have people who are applying these attributes, who are thinking like entrepreneurs with a unified vision, you are going to innovate. You are going to think outside the box. You are going to grow in your marketplace. This is huge. So the business that I'm now running has expanded to working with business owners and their teams, even personalized coaching in that space, not for the owners, but for the team leaders. And this is a segment that often gets forgotten about. We have a lot of materials in place for business owners and executives. What about the people dealing with customers? What about the people on the front lines? How can we help them think like an entrepreneur to grow the business?
That's right. And that's one of the common needs that we get to see all the time whenever we coincide with business owners is so often, a lot of times they use the phrase, think like an entrepreneur, or they'll say like, man, I just want my team to have an ownership mentality, or I just want them to care about this thing as much as I do, like when I started it. And they're like, I just don't know how I get people to get there, to feel the way that I did because I started this thing. I pulled this thing out from the ground and just made it happen, right? And that's such a need and such a hunger and longing for people. And one of the things that I often have to realize is like, okay, well, the reason why I feel that longing and that desire or where I feel that passion and zeal is because I started it, right? And it's like, they weren't there for that. So we shouldn't just expect that people show up on our doorstep with the mindset that you're about to teach us on, because it's like, we live in a culture that is basically the opposite of everything you're about to talk to us about. And so it's almost reframing the expectations that the proper mindset is not something we should expect to inherit or that we're entitled to in our team members. It's something that as a business owner, it really bodes well for us to take ownership of training and developing it into people. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's about the development piece. Now, Alex, I've been in education long enough. The students that I have worked with have gone on to become those employees at these US companies, the people who are now running and working these businesses. And I can tell you definitively that our school system has failed from the perspective of the mindset that small business owners around the US are looking for in their employees. But if we approach it from a development perspective, if we say you're not only going to be part of, you know, helping us achieve our vision, We're going to help you develop as an individual and develop a mindset that is going to lead you to fulfillment while working with us. Now, all of a sudden, it's a game changer.
Love that. Okay, so we're going to walk through the four attributes of the entrepreneurial mindset. Give us just a little bit of a teaser on what these attributes are and how they connect to the mindset that we're trying to cultivate, Stephen.
So if you Google entrepreneurial mindset, and trust me, I've done this many times, and it's worth noting to listeners that I'm an accidental entrepreneur, probably like many, many of your listeners. And along the way, I discovered I had to really learn these skills if I was going to teach them. And like you, you've said this before, you know, once you teach something, you really understand it. So I went on a journey to understand what it is, what does it mean to think like an entrepreneur? And there are over 85 attributes that are called entrepreneurial mindset, you know, creative thinking, innovative techniques, all of this. I realized early on, if you go to someone and say, 85 attributes and you can think like an entrepreneur, I mean, come on, like you don't even know where to start and you've overwhelmed them. But I discovered something else in real time. When you say things like hands-on ownership, which you mentioned a little bit ago, or other things that we work on developing, like emotional intelligence, collaboration, communication, when you look at these core skills, it all boils down to four foundational attributes. And what started as a hypothesis and is now a tested theory is as follows. If we hone in and focus on these foundational attributes, we are giving people the foundation on which they can launch into any area and experience success.
So powerful. Well, if you need any more reason to listen than that, then I'm pretty sure you don't have the entrepreneurial mindset and you really need to listen. So, okay. So let's jump in. Give us the first attribute and start to give us kind of insight into what it truly means and the substance behind it.
The first attribute is growth mindset. Now, to the listeners, this is a very familiar term. Carol Dweck coined this term in her research. And growth mindset at its core very simply means we believe that we can improve in any area with time, dedication, and effort. It's a very, very simple definition. But here's why it's so incredibly important, Alex. In our lives, we are born with a growth mindset. And that's because we have to improve, right? When we're a baby, we fall down and we crawl and, you know, we have to learn. We have to keep trying. By about third grade, and this is incredibly sad, but it's so true. By about third grade, we've adopted a fixed mindset. Someone has said, boy, you know, math isn't your strong suit, or maybe you should try a different sport other than basketball, or you know, you're not quite as fast. Now, we don't do this directly to kids, but indirectly, that's the message society brings. And that puts us into a mindset that is fixed. And honestly, the most difficult thing is breaking someone out of that fixed mindset to say, no, you can improve in any area with time, dedication, and effort. And this really gets to the heart of the ideology that at the end of the day, effort trumps talent. Effort wins. Effort is what matters. Now, here's why that is so encouraging, Alex, is you're going to look at someone who is taller and faster and stronger and better looking and all these things. And you can say, that doesn't matter because effort wins. And that message is not just important to kids and to teens. That is a message that needs to be heard by everybody. But I want to clarify something, and we'll talk more about growth mindset, but growth for the sake of growth is not healthy. Growth for the sake of growth is like weeds in a garden. And we would do a lot with gardening in our entrepreneurship program, which is kind of strange, but I love it because the metaphors are so profound. Weeds are phenomenal. They are unbelievable. They'll grow overnight in any conditions. They're absolutely amazing. The problem is nobody wants them, right? You don't want weeds in your garden. Weeds choke out the plants that give you the fruit. And I often, you know, hear students say, well, I want to do this and I want to try this and I want to go here. And that's great. I love experiences. But if we are only growing to grow, I don't know that that's the healthiest kind of growth. We focus growth mindset as directed growth. Now, I want to use the gardening metaphor a little bit more here. I want you to picture a tomato plant. Now, there are two different types of tomato plants. There's determinate and indeterminate. A determinate tomato plant is only going to grow to about 8 feet and then produce fruit. Pretty straightforward, pretty typical. An indeterminate tomato plant will never stop growing until it dies. It will never stop growing until you yank it out of the ground. We actually have a greenhouse on our campus in Cincinnati, and we grow indeterminate tomato plants. We had one that grew 40 feet tall. 40 feet tomato plant. Now, here's the key. The indeterminate tomato plant is so focused on growth that it forgets its real job is to produce fruit. So we have to come by and prune it. We have to cut off the suckers. We have to cut off the excess leaves, and we have to tether it to a string so it will grow upwards. Now, I love this metaphor, Alex. And I'm telling you, like, you come visit me in Cincinnati, I will walk you in our greenhouse, I will show you the tomato plants, and I will turn to you and say, this is how we teach growth mindset. Because if we don't have a mission, if we don't have a vision, and if we haven't taken the time to dive into our core values, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, Alex, because like, this is Path for Growth. If we don't help people create the balanced approach to say, I'm not just growing for the sake of growth, I'm growing in a clear direction with a clear purpose. That's true growth mindset. And we do that starting in third grade with kids. We have core values cards that we do. And I do that with people at businesses all over saying, let's dive into this so we know where we're growing. That's what's so important.
That connects to something that I know your coach at Path for Growth, Kyle, says all the time. He says, clarity creates action, right? What are we actually trying to accomplish? And the thing that we're trying to accomplish is not actually growth, right? Growth is the means to something that we're actually trying to accomplish, which I think is really helpful to understand and wrap our heads around. I think there's so many people that are probably pumping their fists right now. They're saying, yes, that's exactly what I want, number one, for myself. I want to have this idea that, man, with the time, dedication, and effort, all things are possible, right? Like, I can take on certain things and I can grow in those areas. Growth is always possible. Not only do we want that for ourselves, we want that for our team members. I'm really interested to hear your perspective on this, because I know you view your classroom with all these students as like a laboratory, right? Like, you get to test out how these things work. And there's one way that looks like, man, I'm going to tell you the importance of a growth mindset and cross my fingers that you adopt it because I've convinced you. And I just see over and over again, people try that strategy and it doesn't work. You could be talking for years about how important it is to adopt a growth mindset and people don't grasp onto it. What have you seen is most effective in terms of getting students, and therefore by extension, people, to adopt this way of approaching life and by extension leadership, Stephen?
Alex, I liken it a little bit to faith, Christianity. You know, I grew up in a church that was very focused on telling people what to believe and said, like, hey, you need to do this. You need to believe this. This is the right way. And as I got older, I realized, as most mature Christians realize, living the example is far more powerful. I can come into a classroom. I can come into a room full of employees. And I can say, hey, we got to have a growth mindset. And no, they'll get kind of excited. Yeah. But if I come in and I am oozing with the joy of life, and every day is just an amazing opportunity to learn, to improve, to say, hey, when I put my head on the pillow tonight, I am going to be better. I will have learned something new. I will have grown in a meaningful way. That's contagious. So I almost say, Alex, like, I don't want to teach growth mindset. I want to live growth mindset so fully that it oozes out and people can't help but say, man, how do I get in on some of that?
How do you cultivate your own growth mindset, Stephen?
Intentionality. It takes intentionality. one of the principles that I know you live by is you can spend your time or you can invest your time. And I'm obsessed. My wife would tell you probably too much, with the idea of intentionally allocating time for a balanced growth. And in this, by the way, Alex, is so incredibly important when we talk about directed growth. We walk students through what I call the circle of intentionality. Now, there are lots of models for this. You may have heard, you know, the five disciplines or five capitals. I call it the circle of intentionality. And in that circle, there's spiritual growth, intellectual growth, physical growth, financial growth, vocational growth, relational growth, and they're in no particular order. But if I focus everything on just intellectual growth, man, I can read a lot of books, I can watch a lot of TED Talks and listen to a lot of podcasts, but am I spending time with my wife and my kids? Am I developing meaningful relationships? Am I exercising? So I look at it as a circle and I say, man, where can I focus growth in all of these areas so that I live a balanced life that is purpose driven? And you know, this wasn't just something that I woke up one day and said, let me try this. This was years and years of saying, boy, like I've got goals in this area, but my life feels out of balance. And I have a heart for young adults. I'll just say that right now. I feel for our young adults. They are growing up in a world that is terrifying because they're being told volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity awaits them. They're being told college might not even offer them up a job afterwards. They're being told that there might not even be a workforce when they graduate. There's a lot of fear. But I believe if we can help them understand the purpose of a balanced growth mindset, they will live a fulfilled life no matter what walk of life they end up in.
Hmm. Is there a story maybe from one of your students that you would say serves as evidence for what you just said?
There's so many stories. This is the beauty of it is this is actually the 10th year anniversary of launching an entrepreneurship program at our school. And 7 years into that journey, I started working with other schools and other organizations. And so I've been able to see in real time the changes. And here's how I'll illustrate it. As a teacher, the ROI is usually pretty long-term. So Alex, like, let's say you get the passion to come teach, which you're welcome to come to Cincinnati and teach anytime you want. You're gonna come in, you're gonna start teaching, and maybe in about 10 or 15 years, you're gonna have a student come back and say, hey, Mr. Judd, thanks. Really appreciated you. And that's gotta be fulfilling to you because that's the ROI, right? And that's why I'll often ask people like, hey, who was the most influential teacher in your life? And then the follow-up question is, have you told them? Okay, listeners, I think that's a challenge for you, right? Have we told our teachers? But here's my point, Alex. When I teach growth mindset, when I teach the principles underlying growth mindset, which I'll tell you right now, the core principle, the one principle that drives it all is consistency compounds. It's what we do every day. It's those daily habits that turn us into the person that we want to become. Here's what happened. I'll give a real example. Zach. I had a student named Zach, took this class as a sophomore. Start of his junior year, he came and found me. I was on our campus. He came up to me. He said, Mr. Carter. I said, hey, what's up, Zach? He said, it works. I was like, what? Like, what works? What, like your car? Like, what are you talking about? He said, no, the whole thing, like the whole consistency thing, the compounding thing, it actually works. I made some goals. I've been achieving them. It's crazy. And I use that to illustrate the point. This is not rocket science, but it's not being taught to our youth. And when they grasp it, they see it in real time. They understand that it is real and they reap the benefits and the ROI is sped up.
Mm. Man, I so appreciate that example because from my experience as a business owner, I would say in terms of helping people grow in this area, number one, I would say exactly what you said. You got to exemplify it yourself. And to the degree that life doesn't feel like an adventure, you're not living with a growth mindset. Because the minute life starts to feel like an adventure, you've adopted a growth mindset. And that's one of the kind of correlations that I know. Like, am I growing? Because if I am, then I'm right on the edge of my comfort zone, or probably yes, on the edge of my discomfort zone. And it becomes an adventure the minute you do that, right? But then number two is, I can talk about it all day. I can even exemplify it all day. What I've observed is the most powerful and measurable progress occurs when I give them the opportunity to be their own evidence, right? When like you give them something that it's like, you are currently not able to do this. We're going to walk a path where you look up in 3 weeks and you're suddenly able to do the thing that you didn't think you could. And then this is the really powerful part, I think, is when you look back 3 weeks later and you say, talk to me about who you were 3 weeks ago and who you are now. Like, reflect on that.
Yes.
I just see over and over again that, man, people need to taste and see a growth mindset. And I think that does something for our confidence, you know, Stephen?
Well, and you mentioned the key there, Alex, and I know you've said this before, but you use the word reflect. This is so simple, but this is a practice that if we can instill it with people we're working with is a game changer. Every teacher I talk to now, and really like any coach, anyone working with someone, I always encourage them, when you're done with your class or your session or whatever it is, you need to take a moment to remind everyone what they learned. And I'll use the example of kids in class. Like, they're going to go home and tell their parents they didn't do anything at school today. That's the default answer for kids. What'd you do at school today? Nothing. It's because we didn't take the time as educators to remind them what they learned and encourage them to reflect on that learning. And I know that one of the principles that you talk about is wisdom doesn't come from experience. It comes from evaluated experience. That's part of the growth mindset. We can't know how far we've grown until we reflect and evaluate the growth and figure out whether or not it's the kind of growth we want to see in our life.
That's right. Yeah. I'll never forget, after starting the business, we were probably about 6 to 9 months in. And I started just having these phone calls with our customers just to kind of check in, see how things were going. And I was dumbfounded, shocked, and terrified to be talking to them. And they'd be like, oh man, I really enjoy Path for Growth. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be a part of it, because I just don't really know necessarily that I've grown that much, or that I can measure how I've grown that much. And I was sitting there on the other side of the phone and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? I talked to you 6 months ago. 6 months ago, you told me a story about how you were way overweight, how your marriage was falling apart, how your business was disorganized, how everything was on fire.
Yes.
And I was like, and now, like, you've got a modicum of consistency. You've got peace in your life. Your prayer life is doing well. Yep. You've lost weight. Your marriage is better. I'm like, what do you mean you haven't grown? Like, I got so irritated, yes, Stephen. But that's when I learned it. It was transformational for our business, which is called Path for Growth. So it makes sense that we would hopefully be a little bit good at this, right? I learned, oh, people don't see their own growth. You have to show them.
Exactly.
We do not press the brakes. We do not stop and say, who was I 6 months ago and who am I today? And that's where, yeah, that's why we created dashboards, which, you know, is now, I mean, like, one of the essential hallmarks of Path for Growth is we give visual evidence to everyone's growth, and we make sure we track it. We make it visual. Because I just think that it's not part of our natural mindset to do that. Final thing before we move on this topic, is there anything else that you really want people to hear about growth mindset as it relates to cultivating it in themselves or developing it in others, Stephen?
We're going to get into this with the second attribute, because there's a lot of things that connect. But growth mindset, like you said, is about proving it to yourself. And it often starts with a small goal of saying, let me test this. Let me test the waters. Let me just try something. Let me try something new and see if I grow in that area. And once we prove it to ourselves, it becomes part of the way that we think. And then it begins to influence everyone around us. And this is one of the things that I absolutely love mentioning when it comes to growth mindset. You already teed up this point, but we can't set about changing other people or forcing other people to change. What we can do is reflect a growth mindset, and other people can't help but want to be a part of that. And I believe that if we want to be a better spouse, a better parent, a better business owner, we have to have a mindset of growth, even toward ourselves. Because a mindset of growth says, I've not arrived. This continuous improvement. The second we say we've arrived, we've entered a fixed mindset. And now our business has a lid on it. And now we have a problem on every level.
So good. Okay, let's move on to the second attribute. What is the second
attribute? This is my favorite. This is my favorite one. Okay, I got to warn you. This one gets me excited. And it is grit. Now, I could be really fancy right now, Alex, and say resilience, but I love the word grit. I love the word grit because, man, it cuts to the heart of what this word is all about. It's also the title of the book by Angela Duckworth. And to the listeners, I know that we probably recommend a lot of books on this podcast, but this is one to check out. Her book on grit will make you a better business owner, a better parent. It'll make you better personally. It's phenomenal. It gets to the science. It cuts to the heart of developing grit. And here's why that's so important. We have a concept in our society that you're either gritty or you're not. Now, I spend a lot of time talking to business owners. I have a couple key questions I ask them. One question is, what do you want to see out of the people that you're hiring? Well, you're not going to be shocked. One of the first answers is, I want them to be gritty. And they always follow it up by saying, and they're just not gritty anymore. This is like that whole classic thing of like, they don't make them like they used to. And then you hear the story about walking uphill to school both ways, you know, 3 miles in the snow and all that stuff. Here's the thing that kind of gets to me. Because it's like, well, stop harping on the millennials. Stop harping on the kids. Have we given them a chance to develop their grit? Right? Whose fault is this? And I look at it as the core of grit, as Angela Duckworth defines it, is so simple. And here it is: passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. That's so good, I got to repeat it. Passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. And here's why I love those first two words. Passion is important. Passion is what's going to get you started. But passion fades. It fades. Right? Passion is going to fade in your job. It's going to fade when you start a business. It's going to fade in a marriage. It's going to fade. Perseverance carries us through and reignites the passion. If we solely are focused on our passion, we're never going to reach our long-term goal, because as soon as the passion fades, we're going to give up on the goal. But perseverance is what's going to carry us the distance. So I have people ask me all the time. They say, Stephen, you don't actually teach grit, right? Like just between you and me, like you don't teach it. And I kind of smile and say, no, I don't. And then they're like, oh, huh, gotcha. And I say, I don't teach grit. I teach goal setting, because grit is a byproduct of setting meaningful goals and accomplishing them.
Mm-hmm. Really good. How do you think of the word long-term?
It depends on the age of the person, 100%. I'm 41 years old. Long-term for me is 5 to 7 years. Okay. If you're 17 years old, long-term is 6 months. It's all about perspective. You know, I once heard someone say that, you know, the older you are, the faster time goes. And that's because it's all about perspective. If you've lived more years, the years pass faster. When you're 13 years old, the year takes forever. So we have to understand that long-term is different for everybody.
How do you think of long-term for a 30 to 35-year-old team member?
I'd say that you have to forecast out several years. But the beauty is, with any long-term goal, you have rocks. You know, to borrow from EOS language, you have rocks you can set. So that long-term goal now has a 3-month component, a 12-month component. It's not just some, you know, out there idea. You can tangibly see progress. The reason I like the word rocks is because I'm a Stephen Covey fan through and through. I adore the works of Stephen Covey. And when you look at the whole put first things first model, he was the one who developed the idea of rocks. The whole idea of the sand and the pebbles and the rocks and the jar that's now pretty overused. Mm-hmm. That was him. Mm-hmm. And if we start with the rocks, we are going to ensure that we're doing the things that need to be done. So the beauty of long-term goals is you can break them into rocks. And I almost look at it as the rocks are stepping stones to the boulder. So we get to the rock, the boulder's now closer. And that long-term goal is now fully realized. I also, though, embrace the idea that the goal is the floor, not the ceiling. You get to that goal, and then you set the next one. You go from there.
Mm. I think this topic ties directly into the impact that a leader can make on someone's life, because I love that the vehicle that we use to develop grit is goal setting, essentially. Set a big goal for your future and believe that it's possible, right? I think big goals, oftentimes, if we're not careful, can do two things to people. It can, number one, be so overwhelming that they don't even get started, right? So it's like, I set a big goal, and then it's like they become very defeated because it's like they've got a list of the big goals that they set that they never even started, they never even pursued. Or they set a big goal, and as it should be expected with anything big, meaningful, and worthwhile, they have a plan, start executing the plan, and then something goes awry, right? Maybe it's not even something related to the goal. Maybe it's something just takes their attention away. And so then they've got another goal to add to the list that they completely abandoned 30 to 60 days in, right? What is the role of a leader in the process, not just of setting the goal, but also pursuing the goal, Stephen?
That's a great question. And you can look at this in a number of different ways. First of all, this has to be a goal. If it's going to be meaningful for the team, it has to be a goal that everyone on the team has been a part of conceiving. If I come in as a leader and I say, all right, here's our goal, here's what we're going to do. Well, that's not going to mean much to you. And you're like, well, here's Steven's goal. I guess I'll help with that. But it's not meaningful to you. Let me give you a real-time example here. Because I'm such a fan of Stephen Covey, I'll use an example from Sean Covey's book, The Four Disciplines of Execution. And he talks about the wildly important goal. You know, Jim Collins calls it the BHAG. He calls it the WIG, whatever you want to call it. I took this concept and I gave it to a group of students. And I said, look, you're gonna decide what we're going to do here. You're going to start a business. That's going to be the goal. But you're going to decide the real goal, the why. You're going to understand what drives it. And I watched as these eight kids came together. And they thought and they processed and they had a whiteboard and they were circling and all this kind of stuff. And then they ended up at the following. We are going to create a business so remarkable that we end up on the Today Show. Now, spoiler alert, they've not been on the Today Show yet. Okay, yet. And that goes back to growth mindset. Carol Dweck says the power of yet. Adding that word yet, okay? I haven't reached it yet. But the point is, it got those kids so fired up because they were unified that my role as the leader was to give them freedom, autonomy, and resources, but not too much of any of those three. Mm-hmm. They had to have the freedom to chase down that goal. They had to have the autonomy to make decisions that were in the best interest of that goal. And I had to make sure they had resources to achieve that goal. After that, my job is to kind of stand back and watch and applaud from the sidelines. And if they start running on the wrong course, maybe a bit of a redirect. But if they believe in the goal, I become the cheerleader.
So good. One of my greatest mentors, whenever we were starting the business, he gave me the advice. He said, Alex, the greatest leaders focus relentlessly on the what and the why. And then they get out of the way and let the people closest to the work figure out the best possible how.
Yes.
And that's what you did with those students, right? It's why it's such a good example. One of the other things that you did that I think there's a principle embedded in is you took all of the realm of possibilities that they could spend their time on, and you applied what is actually a constraint. You said, you're going to build a business. They could have done a billion different things, but you said, you're going to build a business, which actually connotes a lot about like profitability and like an enterprise that is organized and runs about how we're building ourselves as a team, how we're building one business and not six businesses, right? You said, we're going to build a business. And in doing so, you gave them a constraint. And the thing that I so often have to remember for myself, but then also in the way I lead others, is constraints are the breeding ground for creativity. Like the minute I give people a box within which they can brainstorm, I think powerful things happen.
Absolutely, 100%.
Is there anything else on the topic of grit, given that it's the one you're most passionate about, you want to make sure people hear, understand, or are there any blockers that you think we haven't addressed?
You know, it goes back to growth mindset in that effort trumps talent. That's the message here. Effort trumps talent. So if we can help students understand that applying that grit is about saying, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to work longer, I'm going to achieve this goal, we are giving them the key to unlock any area of their life and experience success. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of this call, Max. Max, as the eighth grader, he cast a vision. Okay, now his vision in eighth grade, he said, I want to work at one of the world's best restaurants. Now, this is kind of funny to see an eighth grade kid say this, because you're thinking, all right, kid, like, you know, pat him on the head. Good for you. That sounds great. He was dead serious. He said, no, that's what I'm going to do. In other words, he was casting a vision. Now, to your point, that's a long-term goal. He's not going to get a job at the world's greatest restaurant as an eighth grader, okay? For an eighth grader to have a goal that's years in the future is pretty remarkable. But here's the thing about Max. When he was in high school, all his friends were partying after school and hanging out and staying up late. Max went to a restaurant and bussed tables for 2 years of high school. Now, I don't know if you've ever bussed tables in a restaurant. There are not many worse jobs, right? Because you walk around, you're getting the plates, the dirty plates, you know, you're scraping food off, you're taking them to the dishwasher. It's a very thankless job. Max did it, and he worked harder than anybody else, and he put forth more effort than anybody else. His friends would call him up and say, hey, let's hang out. He'd say, nope, I've got work. What would he mean? I've got work because I'm going to one day be at one of the world's best restaurants. And that grit is what carried him through, and that effort got him to the point that by the time he was a senior, he was on the line of one of the best steakhouses in Cincinnati as a senior in high school because of the grit that he showed.
Man, I just love that story. That's so cool. And I think one of the other principles that's embedded in that story that we've got to remember is vision always implies sacrifice. And yes, we accept that. We know that, right? But then we get upset whenever either ourselves or others aren't making the sacrifices necessary, right? We're like, man, they just need to sacrifice some of these things. They need to say no to some of these things. They need to be able to get focused. And it's like, a lot of times we think we need to spend all our time telling people they need to sacrifice more. And in reality, your time is best spent as a leader helping people get a clearer, more expansive vision of what's possible. Most often when people aren't sacrificing, it's because they don't have a clear enough idea of what's possible if they did.
Absolutely. You know, if they can't see the vision, it's because we as a leader haven't painted it clear enough. So get back to the easel, okay? Stop with the whip as a taskmaster and get your paintbrush out and make that vision clear, make it profound, and make them see where they're going. And then everything else falls into place.
Love it. Okay, let's move to number three. Give us the third attribute, Stephen.
Number three is redefining failure. And this one I've shamelessly borrowed from Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. She has a masterclass that I adore. I love her story. You know, when you dive into her story, you discover that she started that entire business, billion-dollar business. She started it with her last $5,000 in her bank account and a lot of faith and a lot of hope, but a lot of vision. And that's what's so powerful. And in her masterclass, she tells the story about when she was in school, her father used to sit around the dinner table and one by one ask the family, what did you fail in this week? And if they didn't have anything to say, he would genuinely be disappointed. And she said, I realize now he was training us to redefine failure and to understand that true failure is not trying in the first place. We can talk all day long about don't fear failure, don't fear failure. You know, that's great and everything. But what if we change the definition? What if failure is not trying in the first place? There's a quote I love. John Maxwell uses it quite a bit. It's regret for the things that we did will fade over time, but regret for the things that we didn't do or even attempt will last the rest of our lives. Let's help people avoid that lasting regret through redefining failure.
Can you talk to us about how you do this and how you developed this attribute in yourself?
You already said it, Alex. You said I treat my classroom like a laboratory. Talk about redefining failure. I could go on and on in this podcast about the things that didn't work. We're talking about the things that did work. Those are great. We could talk about the things that didn't work, okay? We can talk about businesses that we've launched that have utterly failed, that have bottomed out. We can talk about lessons that I've done where I thought that was it, pack my bag, I'm getting fired. We can talk about, you know, all kinds of issues and problems and, you know, working with contractors and building developments and things breaking. Oh my gosh. But if I was afraid of the traditional definition of failure, I'd have given up years ago. I'd have stopped. I was an English teacher, Alex, back in the day. I could have stayed an English teacher. Look, there's nothing wrong with teaching English. I love English. I love English teachers. But when I was willing to try, it also meant I was willing to not succeed. And that's a really important thing to understand. Success is not guaranteed. And the path to success is often a cycle. And failure happens over and over again in that cycle towards success. But what I came to understand is those failures, traditionally seen failures, have become the greatest building blocks of instruction.
What is it that keeps us from doing this, do you think?
A lot of it is wired in education. One of my pet peeves about education is the grading system. Mm. You got an A, you got a B, you got a C, you got a D, you got an F, right? And we don't want the F, we don't want the D. Maybe we're okay with the C, but we all want the A or the B. And so we understand, okay, it's all about figuring out what I have to do to get the A, which means we stay inside the boxes, we follow the rules, we do what we're told. Not all teachers like me. And the reason why is, man, I want kids to fail, right? I want them to try. I don't want them to fail because they didn't prepare. I want them to try something different and find out what doesn't work. And when we get them to adopt that kind of mentality, they realize that they shouldn't be scared of any problem. See, here's what happens, Alex. If we fall in that traditional mindset, all of a sudden, when obstacles come our way, we're not going to attempt them because we don't want to fail. This goes back to a fixed mindset. If I believe I can't do it, I'm not going to try. Now, Carol Dweck talks a lot about how we praise kids. As parents, this is huge. If we praise our kids for their talent, if we say, boy, you are so smart in math, or boy, you're just such a natural speller, we're actually doing them a disservice. This was shocking for me, by the way. We're doing them a disservice because we're praising a talent. And as soon as they come face to face with something that's difficult in that area, they'll stop trying. If I tell, man, you're amazing at math. As soon as I get a math problem that's too hard for me, I'm going to think, oh my gosh, everyone's told me I'm amazing at math. And now all of a sudden I'm not. What do I do? And now I have this cognitive dissonance.
And so you've lost who you are because you suddenly hit an obstacle that was bigger than what you've experienced before. Man, that's, we could chew on that for a really long time. Why is this idea of redefining failure so important for the business owner or entrepreneur? Why is it something that, like, if you're going to own a business, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have to cultivate this mindset?
I'll tell you why, because growth stagnates when we begin to fear failure. It stagnates. And I love this model. I've worked and talked with the Garage Group, which started in Cincinnati, Ohio, and now is kind of spreading. This is a company, it's a consulting firm, that works with Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies and helps them think more like startup companies. Now, why is that, right? It's because once you get so big, you stop growing at the same rate because you stop innovating and you stop trying because you're afraid of failure. You're trying to please your shareholders, you're pleasing your investors, all of these things. That's the danger zone. Because when we become afraid of not succeeding, we stop growing because we stop trying. And that can be the death knell on a business. But if we continue to operate with this idea that, hey, true failure is if we don't try. Well, all of a sudden, we're going to make mistakes, but we will stay ahead of the game. That whole concept of the minimum viable product, the MVP in business, it's the lean startup model. That's central to this. You don't wait till everything's perfect. If we wait till everything's perfect, we've waited too long. The author of the book says that if you're not embarrassed by the first rollout of your product, you waited too long to go to market. All right? Because you got to get out there, you got to try. How else will you know when to pivot? And how else will you know what your customers really want and need?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think when we divorce failure from our identity, we're able to see it for what it actually is, which is data. If I personalize failure, then I'm ill-equipped to learn from it. The minute I say, man, this isn't about me. This is about something that I did or tried to do for that matter. And it's incredible data about what I should do moving forward. I think that perspective changes everything.
And it makes for great stories.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think in some ways, redefining failure requires you to redefine things as an adventure. That's what I've learned with Aspen really helps me do that because I can really beat myself up. And Aspen will remind me, like, you know, if I do something wrong or make a mistake or, oh gosh, we're not going to tell a 30-minute podcast. I'm sure I'll tell this story eventually. I really screwed up on our 12-day trip to New Zealand just recently, like, and made a mistake that could have been catastrophic, could have been due to failure. And I was beating myself up about it. And she just reminded me, she said, Alex, one of our core values is adventure. She said, like, wow. We asked for adventure. Like, this is, you know, like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings or Star Wars would be so boring if it was this hero that was born as a hero and he was rich and smart and wealthy and wise and he lived his entire life that way. And when he died, he was rich, smart, healthy, and wise. Like,
no one would read that.
Yeah, that's right. It would be so boring. And so it's like, failure is the stuff of life. Like it's the stuff that makes it so interesting. And it's also what makes success worthwhile in some ways. And so
that's so true. And that goes back to grit, is that it's the effort that brings the value in the accomplishment.
That's right.
If you get it with little effort, you don't value it the same way.
Yes. So good. Anything else you want to add on the topic of redefining failure that you want to make sure people hear?
Just that it trickles into the next attribute. And one of the things, Alex, about these is they're so intertwined. I view it, I mentioned as kind of a platform. I almost look at it as a launch pad. And as you grow on this launch pad, you're building on the foundation of the previous attribute. Like, in other words, I don't believe it's healthy to help kids become grittier until they have a growth mindset. Because if you're super gritty, but without a growth mindset, someone's going to use you to their advantage, right? Redefining failure is really only possible if you have a growth mindset and the grit to try. And if you're able to redefine failure, now you're ready for the fourth attribute. And that attribute is opportunity seeking. This is a beautiful attribute, Alex, because opportunity seeking is another way of saying problem solving. And at the core of the entrepreneurial mindset is the desire to solve problems. Now, I'm going to illustrate this with a character from Greek mythology. As an English teacher formerly, I love Greek mythology. I think there's so many lessons that we can learn from Greek mythology. And one of the gods in Greek mythology was Kairos. Kairos had some unique characteristics. He had winged feet, super fast, fly all over the place, and he had a single lock of hair on his head. He was the god of opportunity. And the idea was he would run by so quickly. And if you were ready and fast enough, you could grab that lock of hair and seize that opportunity. But if you waited too long, Alex, all you got was the back of his bald head. Man, talk about a powerful illustration of how to seek opportunity. Because I can stand up here all day and say, seek opportunity. And then someone's going to sit on the couch and say, it's no fair. It never comes to me. Because you're sitting on the couch, right? You got to get up. You got to be on your tiptoes. Kairos will not stand at your door and wait and check his watch and say, maybe he'll come. No, he's on to the next house. And by the way, the people who grab that lock of hair, he's more likely to come running back to them. Right? Because they've learned how to grab it. They've learned how to seize it. And this gets me really excited. I got to jump ahead, Alex, because I told you about Max, right? Here's Max. He's a senior. He's showing grit. Max got accepted to the Culinary Institute of America, which is the prestigious culinary school here in the United States. And Max had been trained, right? Been trained to this entrepreneurial mindset. A lot of that is opportunity seeking. You don't sit around and wait. And when it came time to getting internships, all the students at the Culinary Institute of America wanted to get an internship at Alinea in Chicago, which is one of the best restaurants in the world. It's got 3 Michelin stars. It is a radical, radical restaurant. And everyone who applied got an email back that said, make sure you schedule a time to come, you know, audition your skills. It's called staging in the restaurant industry. And it gave some options about some times, you know, in the next couple months. Max got that email and he saw Kairos running. And rather than, you know, go about his day, he grabbed his car keys, drove overnight from New York to Chicago, knocked on the door of the restaurant, and introduced himself as their next intern. Sure enough, he got the coveted spot. See, opportunity is something that has to be sought and chased and grabbed. And if you have a growth mindset and you have the grit to back it up and you are willing to try, Alex, the sky's not even the limit. There is no limit anymore. That's why this mindset is so powerful. That's why I believe this has to be taught to every child in the world so that they grow up understanding how to seek a fulfilling, meaningful life. It's why I believe business owners have to develop their employees to think this way. Businesses will skyrocket and soar because individuals will be living fulfilling lives of meaning and purpose. Man, I get so fired up about this. It's so powerful.
It's almost like you see a lot of opportunity in this subject, Stephen, which is really cool.
You may be right.
Okay, if you were to survey the landscape of business owners, what would you say is the alternative to opportunity-seeking mindset that is most prevalent?
We can call it a lot of different things. I think the biggest thing is innovative problem solving. And here's what I mean by that. I was recently at Grand Canyon University, and I was talking with the person who runs their Canyon Venture program, and he works directly with entrepreneurs. And he told me the biggest problem that he sees is when someone falls in love with the solution and that he wants them instead to fall in love with the problem. Because if you fall in love with the problem, you are not set on any one solution. As soon as you fall in love with the solution, you're promoting just that one solution. So business owners, imagine your team falling in love with the problem. And now all of a sudden, there are multiple solutions that you can look at to solve that problem.
Man, you could record an entire podcast on that single statement. I think that's so good and so principally right. Because when you say fall in love with the problem, what you're really saying there is fall in love with the customer. Fall in love with the person that you're called to serve. Yeah.
Alex, when we started this call, I mentioned emotional intelligence as a key skill. You know, I read an article recently by Harvard Business Week that mentioned key skills for the 21st century. And one of them was emotional intelligence. And at the core of emotional intelligence is empathy. Mm. And empathy, Brené Brown tells us, is feeling with people. When you are working in a business and you fall in love with the problem, you feel with your customer, you empathize with your customer, and there becomes a powerful connection toward helping your customer solve that problem, not for the sake of profit, not for the sake of the bottom line, but for the sake of making the world a better place. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a guiding principle that I think I've started to reflect on for myself owning a virtual business is just the realization that you never go wrong going to where the people are. And whether the people is the people on our team, whether the people is our customers or our prospective customers, it can be so easy for me to spend time in recordings of people or conversations in our app of people. But man, something powerful happens. And I think it's related to this topic of opportunity seeking is go where the people are. Because it seems like that's where the problems are. And therefore, to use kind of your reframing of it, that's where the opportunity lives, is with the people.
I was reading a book recently that touched on that very topic. And it said one of the problems in businesses is we have these rock star employees who are the front facing, the people focused individuals, and we promote them and put them in charge of a silo. And then after a while, they move up to the executive team and no longer are they interacting with the customer, and they lose sight of who it is they're trying to serve. And that's one of the key problems, is how can we keep our employees engaged? How can we keep the business owner? As a business owner, how can I stay engaged in the customer? That is so key to my success.
Man, so good, Stephen. As we kind of wrap up the four attributes, what would you give to people as like, man, if this is something, number one, that you want to develop in yourself, and then number two, you want to be the type of leader that develops this in others, what's something that you would give to people to take these four attributes and make them practical?
You know, I'd say if you're a reader or even someone who listens to audiobooks, each attribute really has one or two key works that can be associated with it. We can maybe share some of those in the notes for the show. If you're not a reader, really it's about obsessing your own growth in such a way that the trickle-out effect is you develop these attributes. You know, I get asked to work with a lot of schools, and I'll get asked by the head of school, the administrative team. They'll say, boy, I really want my teachers to think this way. And I discover very quickly that some of the people on the administrative team need to think this way. So I'd say, like, maybe as a business owner, maybe we need to do a bit of a reality check. Are we demonstrating these attributes? And if not, have we created a personal growth plan to work on those areas so we can better reflect them to our team?
Yeah. That's so funny that probably the greatest indicator that we don't got it is the fact that we tend to say, I got it. I've got those four attributes. Like, well, you definitely don't have growth mindset if you've got this idea that it's like, I've got those. Like, check that box.
Yes. So true. So true.
One other resource that we can point people to is your latest book, Teaching the Entrepreneurial Mindset. It obviously has kind of your detailed explanation of the four attributes in it. I was reminded looking through this book, Stephen, that I was like, oh yeah, he was an English teacher. That's why this is so well written. So well done there. Now, it's a book that's written really for K-12 schools that are really interested in teaching these attributes. But I just see that all the principles that we discuss in here today are embedded throughout, and you do a great job in a way of communicating them in a way that's really engaging. So I would recommend people check that out and pick that book up. And we'll put the link to that and all the other resources Stephen recommended in the show notes. Stephen, before we go to the final question, how can people stay in touch with you and with everything that you're building right now?
Absolutely. And this is one of the key points I want to emphasize. I work directly with schools. So look, take a bit of a note of the schools in your area that could use help from this perspective. But I also work with businesses, and you can find me on LinkedIn, which is where I'm most active. I also do have a podcast called the Entrepreneurial Mindset Podcast. It's a 10-minute idea every Monday to help you think more like an entrepreneur. So, you know, quick little dose of goodness to get your mindset in a good way. Additionally, I have a newsletter. You can subscribe on my website, seedtreegroup.com. And let's connect, because I am about creating a movement and championing a movement to help people live fulfilling lives through the entrepreneurial mindset.
Love it, Stephen. So appreciate your energy, your passion for this topic. And man, it's just such a gift to have you as part of the Path for Growth community, bringing all of that perspective in there as well. Before we close out, final question for you. If people maybe are in a spot where it's like, man, they were the type of person 10 years ago where this type of conversation would have them so amped, right? And they would be so excited. But 10 years has happened. And now they're the type of person that has maybe been beat up, maybe been a little bit bruised, maybe can be a little bit nihilistic and say, what's the point of all this? How would you talk to that person?
There's really two different areas that I would say people would fall into in that category. You just identified the one, right? We're a little bitter. We're a bit cynical about it. The other one is if we get too comfortable. And I think both of them are danger areas for us. To the first group, you know, we've got that jaded approach. Well, listen, I spend most of my time with jaded high schoolers, so nothing like that scares me anymore. And I would say this, use that to your advantage, right? You've got calluses. I love this idea of going to the gym and getting calluses on your hands. I want to know, do we have calluses on our mind? Let's use that as a strengthening mode to remind ourselves we have seen, we have experienced, we've evaluated that experience. It has made us stronger. How can I use that to my advantage? And to those who are too comfortable, right? Maybe we had that drive, we had that ambition a little earlier, and now we're doing good, right? We got a nice salary coming in. Things are good, going on some nice vacations. I'll tell you what Tim Holcomb of Miami University told me recently. He said, Stephen, number one thing, hands down, We have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Angela Duckworth calls it the hard thing rule. Have one thing that you do that's hard and you do it because it's hard. I don't care if it's a cold shower, an ice bath plunge. I don't care if it's what you were doing, the 5 mile at 5 a.m., right? You do it because it's hard and it reminds you, man, I do hard things and I eat them for breakfast and that's how I roll. And if we get that dose in ourselves, we become unstoppable.
Man, Stephen, appreciate your zeal, appreciate your passion for this topic and the fact specifically that you're investing your life's work into bringing people in this movement of getting the entrepreneurial mindset so that they can be about the business of changing their lives. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Well, my goodness, I'm just so grateful to Stephen for his energy, for his passion, for his investment and involvement with the next generation. Y'all know this. We're rooting for you. We're praying for you. We want to see you win. Remember, my strength is not for me. Your strength is not for you. Our strength is for service. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.